Greg's thoughts on the WrestleMania 40 main event as expressed by Joe Bob Briggs.
I'm happy to report that fortunately for the history of
professional wrestling, WrestleMania 39,
which we just watched, was a big box office disappointment. So when they made
WrestleMania 40, Cody Rhodes
was back, and
The Undertaker
was back.
Paul Levesque,
the producer of that series, learned his lesson the hard way.
The following thing on TV is recommended by the National Education Association. Theme music!
No, speaking as an educator, I do not recommend this show, but that's just my semi-professional opinion.
That's right, Mike, because you're a professional.
A professional!
Now the theme music!
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher! Control!
Tell me before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 465, submission number 27. The Baseball Bunch. The Baseball Bunch aired in weekly syndication and on TBS from August 23rd, 1980 to the fall of 1985 for an indeterminate amount of episodes over five seasons.
Let me count episodes we've covered from 1980. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, I say this is about the 21st, starting in 1980.
I figured we were somewhere around 20. 1980 was not a good year.
No, not a good year for TV. This falls between somewhere between That's My Line and To Tell the Truth, Baby. Actually, you know what? It's technically 20 because you know what one of the entries is? Rip Taylor in Time.
We are still looking for the tapes for that, ladies and gentlemen.
We can't just let that joke die, that bomb from 4 years ago.
No.
Go back to episode 45. I swear, that joke was funny in February of 2020, pre-COVID. We're sorry that COVID is ruined. You know what? COVID's ruined April Fool's forever. I don't mean to get on a rant for that, but seriously, all the April Fool's jokes post-COVID, they all suck.
We tried.
We're ready to play. We're learning the way to do it right.
Johnny Bench, and this is the Baseball Bunch. Sam, Kate, Harold, Ozzie, Rick, Freddie, Michelle, Louie, with the Dugout Wizard, the Chicken,
It's that special time of the year, friends, when a man's fancy turns to the diamond, the dugout, the bullpen, all of these things. Yes, baseball season is upon us once again. And if you're anything like me, you're as happy as a lark that the Yankees swept the Astros on the Astros' home turf. But you're also pining for the days back in the early 1980s when, right after your Saturday morning cartoons, you had a show that taught you the fundamentals of baseball. So what do you get when you have a professional baseballer, a group of kids, and one of the greatest mascots of all time? Let's find out, shall we? The early 1980s was a big time for educational programs for children. And one of the big names in educational programs for children was a man by the name of Ozzie Alfonso, who at this moment in time would be working at the then-named Children's Television Workshop on, most notably, Sesame Street and 321 Contact. Jeff Belinfante and Larry Parker, in association with Major League Baseball Productions, brought in Alfonso to work on the content of this show, which would feature a legendary slugger as the coach of the Baseball Bunch, which is a nondescript, non-determinant, non-competitive Little League team of kids ranging from 8 to 14. Well, almost. You see, a baseball team has 9 people mostly. We only have 8 kids. Serving as the 9th teammate was a real foul character. Major League Baseball Productions first piloted the Baseball Bunch, featuring Cincinnati Reds legendary catcher Johnny Bench as the host, and playing the dugout wizard, Tommy Lasorda, Los Angeles Dodgers manager extraordinaire and slim fast pitchman.
He also had his own Sega Genesis game.
And together with their team, the Baseball Bunch, the series would be a fun and informative way for Little League-aged children to learn the fundamentals of not just baseball, but also good sportsmanship, teamwork, and overcoming performance anxiety. The pilot was filmed at Pepperdine University in Los Angeles, with the team and their coach, Johnny, consulting the dugout wizard on the fundamentals of pitching, catching, and fielding. According to Alfonso, it was a time when educational entertainment for kids was the thing, the late 70s and the early 80s. Mark Durand, who wrote for the series, remembered that the pilot was not cutting it. It was too slack, and he said, "I think there was a general consensus that this needed to be fun. We had to get kids engaged because it was Saturday morning television." So before they went to series in February of 1981, Major League Baseball reached out to somebody to play the 9th member of the Baseball Bunch. Ted Giannoulis, the person they reached out to, had this to say. "After they reviewed the filming, they called me and said, 'Ted, could you come in and help us out? We're going to reshoot the whole script and you could just improvise. We don't have the time to rewrite anything. So just do what you do in these situations.' I went up 2 days later and did it. They sensed that this was the formula that was going to work, and it did. They were able to sell the show. I did the pilot just as a favor. I don't even think they paid me for it." Why is this important? Because, as you know, Ted Giannoulis is a famous figure in baseball history. He is the man behind the famous chicken.
That's right. The San Diego Chicken, as it was originally known back then.
So now we have Johnny Bench as the host, Tommy Lasorda as the dugout wizard, and the famous chicken as the 9th man up. And according to producer Jody Shapiro, the chicken was really hot in those days. He was the premier mascot, and to bring him in just made a lot of sense. The show came with Johnny, and Jody doesn't recall any discussion about, "Let's do the show, but let's not have Bench do it. Let's have someone else do it." When Jody looked back on it, according to an article on Sports Illustrated about the oral history of the Baseball Bunch, "I can't think of anyone better to have done the show." Now, Johnny Bench, aside from being a good catcher, was also big in television. He did a lot of TV work through the 1970s.
He also did an episode of Married with Children. He was a celebrity at a new sports bar that Al and his gang went to. In addition to Johnny Bench opening this sports bar, they also had Joe Namath and Ernie Banks. So they had 3 true sports legends. Now, hold on a second. He was in two episodes, not one, two episodes of the Cleveland show?
Well, Cleveland did have this dream of being a pitching coach.
I remember that. I just don't remember him being on two episodes.
So Bench, Lasorda, the Chicken, the Bunch, and special guest star Steve Garvey reshot the pilot, and it aired on several syndicated stations as a special presentation on August 23rd, 1980, though some stations opted to air it the next day instead. Major League Baseball was able to secure the series for nationwide release, and as preparation for the first season began, production moved from Los Angeles to Tucson, Arizona. Two reasons behind this. One, it got hot in February. And two, proximity to spring training.
Yeah, because Cactus League action would have been starting up around that time.
But before they could get the ball rolling and pitching and catching and hitting, we needed a new team to play the Bunch. Kids from all over the Arizona and Nevada areas came in to audition, but the producers were looking for boys and girls who could play the kids next door, also to reflect the diversity of the intended audience. And contrary to what you may think, no, the kids did not sing the theme song.
Oh.
For 3 weeks, every February and March, they filmed an entire season with those kids. According to one of the kids, each 30-minute episode took basically a day, so we'd start early in the morning and just go all day. We'd film a couple of weeks at a time, and while filming, they'd get out of school for a couple of weeks, and it was glorious. But not everything filmed in Tucson. If you've ever seen an episode of The Baseball Bunch, you know it comes in two acts. The first act features the special guest of the day going over a fundamental lesson in the world of baseball. The second act followed up on that lesson and then ended with an appearance from the dugout wizard, which was basically Tommy Lasorda chroma keyed onto the blackboard from Los Angeles. Another kid said, we would pretend we would look at this chalkboard that was blank, and they would go back to Los Angeles and film it separately with Tommy and then plug him into the show. So Tommy Lasorda was never on the set. The Baseball Bunch premiered its first nationwide season on May 21st, 1981, with new episodes airing every week throughout the summer. My guess is this was the perfect thing to plug in between the end of Saturday morning cartoons and the beginning of the game of the week.
Well, also, I think in a number of markets, the Baseball Bunch aired either before or after This Week in Baseball. Some natural MLB film synergy there.
Yes. And of course, This Week in Baseball, who could forget with Mel Allen?
So the show itself, as we briefly glossed upon, had two different segments. The first segment introduced a current or former Major League Baseball demonstrating a baseball fundamental like learning to pitch within the strike zone, effective fielding, and effective catching. For example, Ozzie Smith, the Wizard of Oz, teaching you how to catch with two hands. Because otherwise, well, Ozzie Smith introduces a pithy montage on what happens when you try and catch a baseball with one hand. Suffice it to say, it is not pretty.
And suffice it to say, hilarity ensues.
And that was without the Chicken. Another key note is that the professional will tell you what not to do. For example, the professional will tell you you shouldn't try to throw a curveball because you are still a growing child and I am a professional. I know how to do this. You need to cover the basics before you learn how to do the big boy stuff. And then the second segment featured more on that fundamental, but it would end with a sort of what did we learn segment with the kids huddled up next to a chalkboard, which featured the dugout wizard. That segment would often be accompanied by a music video. For example, the episode which featured knuckleballer Phil Negro mentions how difficult a knuckleball can be to catch, and then showed several clips of catchers trying to catch a knuckleball. Not only does it cover some of the fundamentals of the game, but you also learn things like teamwork and performance anxiety and dealing with sportsmanship in regards to Little League parents.
Oh gosh, that would be a huge issue nowadays.
So, who were the bunch? Of the many kids to play members of the bunch, only three would last the entire run. Those three are Stacy Blythe, who played Michelle, Jared Holland, who played Sam, and Danny Santa Cruz, who played Louie. The other kids would come and go SNL style as they matured or aged out of the role. For example, Linda Coslett, who played Kate in season one, was 11 when the show started, turned 12 during the month of February, and was on the show for 1 year. And this is Linda talking now. As you know, women get mature during those years, and by the second season, I didn't look like a little girl anymore, so they wanted to go with somebody that was younger looking.
Linda, congratulations. How timely is this? Listen to this. You're a big girl now.
Wait, oh, Lord. Any relation?
The longer the silence lasts, the less likely it's going to make it.
Wait. Any relation to Bruce Coslett, the former New York Jets head coach?
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
I'm actually checking because you never know.
Oh, God. Well, remember, who was he an offensive coordinator for Bruce Coslett? Sam Weish.
His Wikipedia does not list anything about kids.
Okay, no. Good.
Which may be a good thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Eric Lee, who played Rick during seasons 1-4, said of his time, "I was all of 12 years old when I started on the baseball bunch. I stayed on the baseball bunch for 4 incredible years until my voice changed and I was taller than Johnny Bench." Reading through the oral history as posted on Sports Illustrated, it looked like many of the kids were really interested in Little League, but at the same time, they weren't exactly interested in acting. In fact, one kid, Freddie, who was played by Ed Tonai, wasn't interested in acting and hadn't played any baseball or t-ball, but they were looking for a Japanese kid because they wanted to try and sell this in Japan. Hence, the episode featuring Sadaharu Oh.
Now, for those who don't know, Sadaharu Oh is the all-time worldwide leader in career home runs with 868. So, for those keeping score, that is 113 more home runs than Hank Aaron at the time.
And that may be the record at the time, but around here, that is the record. We do not acknowledge the human asterisk, Mr. Barry, what's his name?
Oh, whatever.
Who that guy be?
Who cares?
So yeah, it's 755. It's not 767 or whatever he...
Whatever. The real record's 868.
Well, the major league record. I'm just,
whatever.
Whatever, right.
So going back to what Ed had to say about his time, they had a difficult time finding Japanese kids in Arizona, so they tried to do a little casting in Las Vegas, where I lived at the time. One of the places they looked was the local Japanese American Citizen League, of which my dad participated. Mike Tolan, who was the director of the baseball bunch at the time, said that we were all youngish, and this, for a lot of us, was the first job of this magnitude. We couldn't wait. Imagine, we were leaving New York in the dead of winter to spend 3 or 4 weeks in Tucson, where it was 75 degrees and sunny every day, and we're just hanging out on the field with kids who are always in a good mood and are baseball heroes. We were all baseball junkies, so what could be better? Mike Tolan would go on to do a whole lot of other stuff, including Smallville, Coach Carter, and do I want to mention what he did in the 90s?
Given the recent news, no, we do not.
We talked about the bunch. We talked about Johnny Bench. We talked about Tommy Lasorda. We talked about the chicken. Now we get to talk about the many faces that helped the baseball bunch develop their skills. Some of the guests to appear on the series include Sparky Anderson, Dusty Baker, George Brett, Gary Carter, Bill Connell, Andre Dawson, Rick Dempsey, Bucky Dent, Rolly Fingers, Joe Garagiola, Steve Garvey, Goose Gossage, Keith Hernandez, Al Hrabowski, Chet Lemon, Davey Lopez, Ron Luciano, Bill Matlock, Gary Matthews, Don Mattingly, Tug McGraw, Joe Morgan, Greg Nettles, Bill Negro, the aforementioned Sadaharu O, Lou Piniella, Dan Quisenberry, Jim Rice, Cal Ripken Jr., Frank Robinson, Pete Rose, Bill Russell, Mike Schmidt, Tom Seaver, Ted Simmons, Ken Singleton, The Wizard of Oz, Ozzie Smith, Willie Stargell, Bruce Sutter, Don Sutton, Chuck Tanner, and Ted Williams.
And I, doing a little bit of research today, discovered a YouTube video where Johnny Bench actually said his favorite guest ever on the Baseball Bunch was Ted Williams. Understandably so. Probably the best hitter of all time. And if he's not the best hitter of all time, he's definitely in the top three. But also, think beyond what he did in baseball. He played baseball, then fought for the good side in World War II, and then came back and dominated for another like 16 seasons. Absolutely unheard of.
And there was never a slouch on the field. I mean, you could tell everybody who was there came to work or they came to play. The producers did more than just plan the show and run the errands and do whatever. They, in some cases, were on the field telling everybody what to do. I mean, this was a television show, after all. The producer through the whole thing, Rich Domich, told Sports Illustrated that they'd have guest stars hit or pitch. We'd film it from all sorts of different angles. He pitched to every one of those batting practices. He pitched to Ted Williams. I mean, who gets to do that? He wasn't in batting practice form. And we kind of shamelessly had the little girl in the cast say, "Mr. Williams, will you hit?" And he couldn't say no. So the producer could throw the ball, but couldn't find the plate to save his life. Ted Williams yells to the producer, "Throw harder." He starts throwing harder. Ted Williams is like, "No, throw harder." He threw a little harder. Then he's like, "No, throw as hard as you can." And Domich is like, "Oh my God, I am throwing as hard as I can." And all he could say when he looked up to the sky, "Please God, don't let me hit Ted Williams." 14 pitches later, he manages to pitch a good one to Ted Williams. And that's basically how a season of the show was produced. It went out to air during the summer months. Of course, they would rerun it as needed in the off season, but they would come out every opening week with new episodes for the next 4 years. Throughout the years on the air, the show won multiple Emmy Awards for Outstanding Achievement in Special Programming, a gold medal for the International Film and Tape Festival in New York, an award from Action for Children's Television, and a coveted endorsement from the National Education Association. Bob Rubin of the Miami Herald wrote of the show, "The Baseball Bunch is a humorous, marvelously creative blend of entertainment and instruction. With the glut of dreck that passes for children's programming on the weekends, it's a breath of fresh air, and you don't have to be a kid or a baseball fan to enjoy it either. Serving as both participants and pupils is an 8-kid rainbow coalition that represents a typical neighborhood group. There are 6 boys and 2 girls ranging in age from 9 to 14. The Chicken may be the most gifted physical comic since Curly, Larry, and Moe. It's a laugh and a lesson, which is SOP on the Baseball Bunch." Ted Gianulis recalled players secretly enjoying the show, saying, "It was the real highlight being on the program. During the show's existence, I had professional baseball players tell me that they would sneak a peek at the show and pick up tips because the information that Johnny and our guests would put on the show was very, very good inside baseball information. So I took that as a real compliment because it signified how credible and good the advice that Johnny and the players were giving, and that not only were kids picking up good advice, but I could attest that professional ball players were also tuned in as well." Unfortunately, the end of the bunch came at the end of the fall of 85. No real reason as to why, but you can do your own research, form your own opinion. But the show did have a bit of a legacy. In its time, the series not only had legions of fans, it also had its very own official fan club, the Baseball Bunch Fun Club, which young fans of the show could join for a small fee of $4.99. Members received a certificate, a Baseball Bunch t-shirt and wristbands, a full-size color poster of the bunch, a fun book, which includes color photos and biographies of Bench, Lasorda, the kids, and the chicken, puzzles, sheet music and lyrics for the show's theme song, and a comic strip known as The Baseball Bunchies. After the show went off the air, thanks to friends and money from Kool-Aid, episodes were edited together into 3 VHS releases covering hitting, fielding, and pitching. They command a pretty penny on the secondary market, and said tapes, as well as a handful of episodes, are also available right now for free on YouTube. Theoretically, the show could have been released on DVD, but it used a lot of 80s music.
Now, I do remember renting the hitting and the fielding tapes from the library back in the day, and I loved how they had a special intro for the videotape, where the Kool-Aid man came busting through a wall going, "Oh yeah."
I want to say that was on an episode, because I remember that now that you mentioned that. And I never got any of the videotapes.
The videos also included a new segment called Drills, in which Bench would recommend basic drills young viewers could use to improve their game, while the 3 children, that would be Stacy as Michelle, Jared as Sam, and Danny as Louie, demonstrated each exercise. As compilation of previous episodes, those segments of Lasorda as the dugout wizard were included on the videos, but the tapes focused exclusively on segments which had featured the bunch with the Major League guest stars. It also did not include the Baseball Bunch theme song, replacing the opening and closing theme with an alternate instrumental version of the music. Lest you think that this is the end of the story for the Baseball Bunch, Steve Church, who is a producer, directed, created, and produced a local version for the St. Louis market called the Cardinals Kids Club. It featured the Cardinals and then team president Mark Lamping. He thought that a modern day version could work, and he produced the show to air on Bally Sports Midwest. Of course, then it would be Fox Sports Midwest. He went on to produce another pilot for the series for ESPN, which was taped in Williamsport, Pennsylvania and Los Angeles, California, featuring Harold Reynolds as the mentor and, as the ninth person on the bunch, the Philly Fanatic.
Oh, that's nice. The Philly Fanatic, because, you know, the Philly Fanatic, he's kind of like the modern equivalent of the Chicken. Although, I'm going to stress, if you did a hockey version of the Baseball Bunch, you know who you could get to play the Chicken role in the hockey version?
Do we even need to answer that? I know you're going to swerve on me, but is the answer Gritty?
Yes, of course it is.
Okay, I thought maybe you'd like pull a Yuppie on us or something.
No, if I was going to do that, I'd say Wild Wing from the Anaheim Ducks.
I think Yuppie would be better because, remember, Yuppie used to be the Expos mascot. So that's there's your tie to baseball.
I don't even remember what Yuppie's... Oh, he's with the Canadians right now. Okay.
Yeah, Montreal.
Les Habs.
Yeah. Here's a funny story. You know the H in the Canadians logo? I didn't know that was supposed to symbolize hockey.
No, that doesn't symbolize hockey.
Really?
No, the French word that they use is habitants, like inhabitants. And that's what H is, les habitants.
Oh, that's why they're the Habs.
Yeah.
Now, my brother took French. I never learned any second language at all.
Now, hold on. It's going to be another story time with Mike. Back 35 years ago, so this is 1989, my French class took a weekend trip to Montreal. First and foremost, if you've never been there, go there. It is an absolutely amazingly beautiful city. And even in the middle of winter, when there's a ton of snow on the ground, there's stuff to do underground. They have like an underground village. But how I'm tying this in, Greg, if you have never been in the house of like an 80-year-old Canadian French woman watching Stanley Cup hockey at like 11 or midnight and just being there rooting with this woman, having no idea what the heck she's saying, you haven't lived life. That was the greatest moment maybe of my childhood. Going to Montreal and me and her, my classmates had gone to sleep. They didn't want to watch hockey. Me and this old lady are watching hockey, French language hockey. We're not watching the English language version because, you know, that'd be too easy. And we're just going bonkers for God knows what reason. Besides, you know, Montreal was actually good at the time. But, oh yeah, they love their hockey up there in Montreal.
That was the Patrick Waugh era in Montreal. But hold on a second. Was it like, did they like have people subtitling or speaking for the English announcers? Or was it like a completely French?
Well, no, this is a completely French version because the CBC, they do have an English language feed or English language shows and French language shows. So it wasn't dubbed. It wasn't like subtitled. It was actually a French language feed of Hockey Night in Canada.
I would have loved to have seen a French dub of Ron McLean. I know Don Cherry would not appreciate a French dub of him.
Don Cherry doesn't appreciate anything.
Yeah, I was saying, Don Cherry is borderline Mr. Black territory.
Hold on. Bunch of jerks. I said it. I said it twice.
They're a bunch of jerks.
Come at me, Don!
But let's be honest. They're not as good as the Rangers. Hey, they just won 4-3 over Detroit.
And the Hurricanes just came back from down 2-1 to win 4-2. It's going to be a nice and spicy Stanley Cup playoff, I think. Despite appearances by Jimmy Kimmel, J.K. Simmons, Roy Firestone, Scott Rolen, Jose Lima, Fernando Valenzuela, and Bobcat Goldthwait, ESPN ultimately was not interested. But Church was developing another version featuring John Goodman. The show still has an MLB star as host and the Philly Fanatic, But in describing his vision, Church stated, "We're still going to have that big guest star and that big league Tippett narrative. The host's friends come on the show, teach the kids how to play the game. Those elements will still be there." He went in with WME and IMG Sports and the Dravis Agency. Sources close to the project say that Major League Baseball sees the Baseball Bunch as a launch to expand ancillary programming of its new MLB broadcast and streaming deals. However, as of the production of this episode, nothing more has come of the project. Although Albert Pujols has been rumored to be attached to it.
I really think that's a great choice for a number of reasons.
Beloved baseball player, great screen presence. Why not?
Another thing he brings to the table, if you think about it, guys, is representation of minorities. Since he comes from the Caribbean, I don't remember exactly where.
Dominican Republic, baby.
Okay, so you've got representation there of somebody who's come from a pretty big area when it comes to baseball players. Maybe he can interest a future generation in baseball, specifically a future generation of English language learners / Spanish speaking children.
Now, guys, I want to show off some cards that I found during this episode of several people who have been on the Baseball Bunch that I've collected over the years. So I'm going to show you the first one right here. It is a autographed Raleigh Fingers card from Upper Deck Sweet Spot Classic. And this is from 2005. So I'm showing it to you right now. I only paid about $25. Not a bad price.
I've always loved that type of card.
Now, another card I found is I got this card from 2019 Topps Baseball. It's a jersey swatch of Tom Seaver in a Topps 1984 style. So it's him in a Mets jersey. This is obviously from 83 when he came back from the Mets. And it's got a blue swatch. And then at the bottom, on the bottom left, it has All-Star and it says NL at the bottom. And yeah, this would have been the 35th anniversary of this card because it would have been 2019. So it would have been the 35th anniversary of the 84 set. And it has on the back similar style you'd find on a Topps 84 card.
And actually, I think we should mention Topps enjoys doing that, doing designs from 35 years ago. And they've done this at least since 2018. Because I've got Shohei Ohtani rookie cards from 2018, which are in the style of 1983 Topps, which I think I've declared it on the show, but if I haven't, 1983 Topps is by far my favorite style design of all time. But they're doing it right now with the 1989 cards. They're getting into the junk wax era.
And now I got this card from a Topps 03 set, and this is of Gary Carter, and it's in an Expos jersey, and it's got a BD blue Expos swatch. I have a bunch of Gary Carters, but this is the one I can find right here. And also, it's authentic to the Baseball Bunch because from 80 to 85 throughout most of the run, Gary Carter was with the Expos. Didn't go to the Mets till 85. But the last one I found is a card that I got on eBay last year, and I got this one signed at a card show at Hofstra last December. It's from Upper Deck SP Legendary Cuts 05. And it's of Bill Madlock. And you see it autographed right here.
Nice.
It only cost me $20 for the autograph. You know what? Worth it for this card.
Beautiful. So I guess we're doing show and tell?
Yeah. Right. What do you have from a baseball bunch of people that have been on?
I did not go through looking for jersey cards. I'll just state that off the top. And if I take a look at the list of people who were on Baseball Bunch, I don't even know how many I have jerseys of. I think I've got an Andre Dawson jersey card. think that might be it. Not even joking. But what I do have is, over the years, collecting cards and buying packs, I've amassed a number of players' autographs who are on the baseball bunch. So the first one I'm going to show is, and this, I loved this player as a kid. This was something I just got in the last probably about 4 or 5 months. Jim Rice. And this is actually numbered out of 10. So Jim Rice, he's a very good player. He's a Hall of Famer. Not a huge name necessarily to those who are a little bit younger. But I liked him as a player back in the day. And out of 10, I am just absolutely over the moon.
Yeah. Now, hold on a second, Mike, because I just found this art
okay.
in my pile.
Okay.
I have from Donruss Lever and Lumber 05. A Jim Rice autographed lever cuts card.
Oh.
It's a piece of glove autographed by Jim Rice, and it's numbered 89 out of 128.
Ooh, very nice. I've got two more for the next player. One of these I got, this first one is clearly authentic from 2020, and this goes back to what I mentioned earlier with Topps doing throwbacks of 35 years ago. So this is 2020, clearly authentic, Ozzie Smith autograph in the style of a 1985 Topps, but also about 14, 15 months ago in Five Star, which is one of my favorite sets because you get only two cards, both of them are autographed, and when I opened this last year, the 2022 product, I bought two boxes, or two packs, essentially, four cards, and three of them were Hall of Fame players. Ozzie Smith and Carl Yastrzemski, and I forget who the third one is. But it was a Hall of Famer. Quick addition, it was Eddie Murray. So this is, out of 50, an Ozzie Smith autograph from the 2022 Five Star. And then this next one is Topps Finest from 2018. So again, that's rookie year of Shohei Ohtani. This is out of 10, one out of 10, Cal Ripken autograph. And got three more. 2022 Topps Chrome Black. Again, every box came with four cards, three regular cards, and one autograph card that was encased in a holder. And in one of the boxes that I bought, got Mike Schmidt. And then, again, going back to not 2020 clearly authentic, but 2021. So, again, this is in the 1986 style, 35 years earlier. Out of 10, Steve Garvey, who should be in the Hall of Fame. And last but not least, one of the newer additions to the collection. This would have actually been from museum collection from last year, the same series that the Jim Rice came out of. Numbered 3 out of 20, the one and only, the host of our show, Johnny Bench. And I mentioned to Greg and Chico before the show, I was getting these ready for the show because I had some ideas about what I was going to do with them. I do have a Lou Piniella autographed buyback card from 1983 Topps. I just couldn't find it. I know it's here somewhere, but I couldn't find it in time for the show. So unless Chico's got something for show and tell, I think we're ready to tie everything up. And
well, it's not even baseball bunch related, but all I have is this Bunker bobblehead. Well, there you go. Baseball bunch, baseball players, Johnny Bench. Little baseball players, the chicken, clips, music, and an integral part of the childhood of many a, I guess, middle-aged baseball fan now. It remains, to this day, a very beloved and very missed thing on TV.
And actually, I wanted to mention a couple of things. We did not talk about the announcer on the Baseball Bunch. A gentleman by the name of Warner Fusel. where you know Warner Fusel from is he was the voice of This Week in Baseball after Mel Allen left the show. Big name. If you ever watch any MLB film shows, he's sort of like the John Facenda of baseball. But also, and I think Greg and I actually talked about this about 4 years ago when we were in the middle of COVID, MLB Network at the time, just about every Saturday for probably close to a year, maybe 9 months, they showed old This Week in Baseball episodes. Generally from like about the late 70s to the mid 80s. And I sort of wished, and I think Greg did too, if MLB Network is going in the archives and showing This Week in Baseball from 40, 45 years ago, they got to have the Baseball Bunch. Why don't they show that? I know it's a little outdated, but also MLB Network on Saturday mornings shows a lot of programming aimed towards the younger generation. Because this generation, for whatever reason, they don't like baseball. Is it because there's not enough scoring? Is it because there's not enough action? Who knows? But they have shows like Play Ball, and I know they had a show called Carded, which is all about baseball cards, trying to get kids interested in the sport and the hobby. So Major League Baseball, you're sitting on it, and we've actually talked in the past saying that, you know, after October until February, what does MLB Network have to show? They don't really show reruns of old games. I mean, they might show old World Series or old All-Star games, but they don't show reruns of games from earlier that season. So, you know, why not go in the archive, pull out some of these nuggets? I mean, however many episodes there are, I'm going to assume there's probably somewhere between like 50 and 100. Put it on once a week or put it on Saturdays and Sundays. I think it's a great filler. And it's also a throwback to a much different time. Another final little nugget I want to pass along, and a very timely one at that. The San Diego Chicken, believe it or not, you're going to listen to this starting on the 11th of April, this Thursday. He was officially hatched, not necessarily born, but hatched, on April 9th of 1974. So this past Tuesday was the 50th anniversary of the San Diego Chicken. But also I should tie in with baseball that the day before, April 8th of 1974, was actually the day that Hank Aaron hit his 715th home run, since we alluded to Hank Aaron earlier in this episode.
Well, the Baseball Bunch, it was educational, and we got a lot of laughs from the Chicken. And it was certainly a memorable thing on TV.
One more thing related to this, and then we'll start wrapping up the festivities. Guys, I think we're going to play a little bit of non-eBay Price is Right.
What?
What I have found, and this is absolutely amazing. I'm just going to say that right off the bat. This is truly one of a kind. This is from the San Diego Chicken. It is one of his feet. You heard me correctly. It is like the shoe, slipper, whatever you want to call his footwear. Okay? Now, there's some specific details about this. First, it is signed by Ted Gianulis with the inscription, the SD Chicken. Second, it says it's signed by Pete Rose, but that doesn't look like a good Pete Rose autograph. So don't let that factor into what you guys may bid. Third, there is also a mention on this foot, on one of the, I don't want to say toes, but on the left side of the foot or the inner side of the foot, assuming it's a right foot shoe, it says, game worn. Final Chicken appearance for Padres at Jack Murphy Stadium close, September 2003. So you think that's really cool? It's signed by Ted Gianulis. It may be signed by Pete Rose, even though I'm skeptical. And then also game worn at the final game played at the Murph. Sit down, because I think the best is for last. Fourth. Also mentioned on this, on the opposite side, it says WrestleMania 15 worn.
Oh, that's great. It was not only worn by the Chicken, it was also worn by Rose when he got Tombstone Pile driven by Kane.
Well, like I said, I looked at the autograph, and that doesn't look like a very solid Pete Rose autograph. I'm not saying it's not, but it looks off compared to when I got his autograph like 7 years ago.
Well, in all fairness, he was probably having a concussion from being Tombstone Pile driven by Kane.
So, gentlemen, for this item, we're going to do dollars and cents, okay? And actually, the site that I got this on, there's a 30% off sale that ends today. I don't know if it really ends today, if I click on it tomorrow, if there'll still be a sale message. But we're going to go with the sale price for this item, okay? Greg, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay, so it was worn at WrestleMania 15 in Philadelphia, where as we speak, as we're taping this, tomorrow will be WrestleMania 40 in Philly. Just want to add that.
So 25 years ago.
Yes, 25 years ago in Philly. And this year, WrestleMania is in Philly. I will go. It's signed by the Chicken and signed by Pete Rose.
Well, allegedly signed by Pete Rose. Again, don't let that factor into your bid.
I've seen Pete Rose's autograph. That looks like Pete Rose.
No. Like I said, I've got Pete Rose's autograph too, and mine doesn't look like that. But I can tell you this. Ted Gianulis, from what I've seen, is absolutely 100% authentic.
Oh, definitely. I will go $450.
$450, okay. Chico?
Okay, you said dollars and cents?
I said dollars and cents. If you want to do just dollars, that's fine. But the price I'm going to give you is dollars and cents.
$516.32.
Somebody's been reading Adam Neva's book, I can tell.
Oh, but yes.
Guys, break out the debit card. This will cost you, and mind you, this is 30% off, $4,804.19.
Shut up!
I'm not kidding. And actually, the regular price, the non-sale price, is $6,863.13.
But it's James Spence authenticated, so you know it's quality.
Oh, you know it's legit if it's James Spence authenticated, absolutely. But also they say that the estimated tax on this is going to be about $384. So after it's all said and done, you're probably looking at about $5,200, $5,300. Free delivery, though.
Now, if you cannot afford such a thing, there is an official Wilson baseball signed by Ted Gianulis, which goes for the sale price of $234.19.
Or if you really don't want to pay that, I was doing a little searching on eBay earlier, and I found what looks like not issued by Donruss per se, but an autographed card, I think it was from 2021, by Ted Gianulis with the Chicken inscription. And that was going as of the time of recording, and it's going to end in the next day, so the auction will have closed by the time you hear this. But it was going for like about $16. But hey, guys, you know how you can get enough money to buy that San Diego Chicken foot?
How?
I was hoping you would say that. Hop in your TARDIS, go back to 1984, and get on Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour this week. Let's take a little trip back in time.
It's time for This Weekend Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour History.
It's week 24, and this week we have Bill Rafferty, creepy Uncle Bill, Vern Fitzgerald, Rod Ahrens, Marsha Wallace, Marty Cohen, Michael Lembeck, Sorrel Book, And the person we talked about last week, where I sort of said, this person has been on TV for about 35-ish years, maybe a little bit longer, or hasn't been on regular TV, let's say, in that time. And this person was on a retrospective for the Super Bowl a couple of months ago, talking about the retrospective about the NFL today. You Are Looking Live, which if you didn't see, it was absolutely great. Talking about the one and only, and actually I should add, Wycliffe, Ohio's own Jane Kennedy. That's
yeah.
Right. A Match Game Hollywood Squares celebrity was raised in the little city that I live in. How about that? And we love Jane Kennedy around these parts, in case you don't know.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of gameplay this week, we did have two big money wins. We didn't have a win on Monday. We didn't have a win on Wednesday. We didn't have a win on Friday. So it alternated loss, win, loss, win, loss. But the two wins, we had a $10,000 win with John on Tuesday and a $5,000 win with John on Thursday. So again, as I mentioned in a previous installment, people are going to John. And as I also mentioned, for weeks, and I'm talking actually not even weeks, months, John never had the 30, even though it was supposedly random. The law of averages says he's supposed to have it one every 9 episodes. It's kind of far-fetched for him to go 40 or 50 episodes without having it once, just saying. Next week, we've got some familiar faces from Match Game appearing, but also we have a television legend, among other people. There's actually a number of legends, but we've got like one super legend. Back to Chico to wrap up everything.
Well, that's going to do it for this installment. But remember, you can always go to our website at itwasathingontv.com. You can listen to the 464 episodes that preceded this one. In addition, we have great bonuses, minisodes, live shows, previous episodes, extended, and delayed reactions and instant reactions. Don't forget, we are on all social media at It Was a Thing on TV, except for Facebook, where we are at It Was a Thing on TV podcast, and on Mastodon at It Was a Thing on TV at tvwatch.party. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts can be streamed. Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Audible, indie podcasters. We love our indie podcasters over here. And we are also on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, hit the notification bell so you can stay informed on all future uploads on the channel, including what's coming up next time.
Guys, guess what?
What? Yeah.
We're going to talk about it next week.
We're going to talk about what?
We're going to talk about it. And I'm not talking about the Stephen King or creepy clowns here. We're going to talk about it.
What's it?
What?
It! I told you when I first said what's coming up next week. I said exactly what we're going to talk about.
What are we going to talk about?
Guess what we're going to talk about.
That's what I'm trying to do!
Now, wait a minute. He said it. I know what he's talking about. He's talking about the thing that Doug Funny and his family stopped at the side of the road to see that one time.
Oh, I loved that.
I don't get that reference, but you're wrong. We're going to talk about a show, actually sort of like The Baseball Bunch, in the sense that it ran for like 5 seasons. It ran also in the early 80s, but it is one of the cheapest shows with one of the most lackluster hosts of all time, with really a set and music that you would think just came off of a sitcom back in the 80s. So next week, we're going to make sure that there's not much guessing what is going to be going on. Confused? Yeah, you'll be confused until next week. Let's keep it that way.
Even after that explanation, I'm still confused. But I'm pretty sure I'll get it in time for the next installment of It Was a Thing on TV. For Greg, for Mike, I'm Chico. Thank you ever so much for listening. Please be kind to one another, and we will see you for the next one.
Wow! Let me introduce you to someone who knows it all. What are the magic words for today, old dugout wizard?
Three simple words, Mr. Bench, will make your bunch play much better baseball. The words to remember are, I got it.
I got it.
Alice, what have
killing
you got?
Killing me softly with his song.
Yes, he is. I wish he'd cut that out. Killing me softly with his song.